So, once we kidnap Super Cop, then what?
Tiny surgery. I'd like to take his face off. Yes. If you excuse me, I have to use the little boy's wee-wee room.
Cass.
You want to take his face?
Yes. His face. Oh. The eyes. Nose. Skin.
It's coming off.
The face.
Welcome to another exciting episode of Not in a Creepy Way, the podcast where the Brothers Anderson will dig deep into the movies.
The Brothers Anderson are...
This is Eric.
And by the way, you know, when you're telling these little stories, here's a good idea. Have a point. It makes it so much more interesting for the listener.
This is Brother Jay.
You ask me if I have a God complex. Let me tell you something. I am God.
This is Drew.
There is a storm coming like nothing you have ever seen! And not a one of you is prepared for it.
So sit back, close your eyes, and let us take you away. Unless you're driving, in which case keep your eyes open and watch the road. And, you know, anyway. Deep inside, don't lose your head. 'Cause I can't do the time. Don't lose your head. Welcome, this is Eric.
This is Brother Jay.
This is Drew.
And tonight we're going to talk about, a movie that should have been higher on our top 100 movies. On our top 10 movies, this should have been maybe number 3. We're talking about 1997 John Woo's Face/Off. Now, Brother Jay, this is on your list. Introduce us to Face/Off.
Well, when you're feeling low and you just don't know where to go, this is where you go.
Because it makes you feel amazing.
It makes you realize that as bad as movies can be, your life is better than that big, steamy pile of shit.
So you're telling me, and I was joking about whose list this is on. This is certainly on my list.
It was not on my list.
Drew, was it on your list as well?
I don't know about lists, but I love this movie. I love it.
I love this movie too. So much. I could watch this movie again now.
This is one of those movies where no matter when you come to it, if you're flipping channels, there's always something really fun right around the corner.
Yes, it's on another channel.
There's so much fun about this movie. Brother Jay, I don't understand, but we're gonna go through it line by line, maybe.
Well, I may hang in by the third line, but by the fourth one, I'm probably going to throw myself down the stairs.
So, Jason, had you not seen this movie before?
Oh, no, I've seen this movie before.
Like, didn't we see it in the theater or something? I mean, guess in 97, you would have been in Portland.
Yeah.
Maybe this is one I saw with Sandy, but, oh, this is a... Okay, this is, I'm going to dare say, better than Roadhouse.
No.
Wait.
No. Sam Elliott and Patrick Swayze. Are you kidding me?
Now, this
Wait, hold on. John Travolta and Nicolas Cage and Liam Gallagher? Come on.
Eric, I want to say you and I saw this in the theater together. Because this was a summer movie, right?
I think so.
I would have been home from school.
Yeah, what's not to like about this movie?
Everything.
Did you like it? Did you like it at the time, Jason?
No.
So, Drew, what do you remember from seeing this the first time, or do you have any memories of this movie?
Yeah, I have lots of memories. I've seen this movie a ton of times.
Why?
Because it's so unbelievably fun. It is so over the top. I mean, this is a high budget, high quality B movie with A-list stars.
Oh, it is a polished turd, to be sure.
It's got so many references to other things. I mean, this is the high point in a lot of this stuff, I think.
This is such a weird movie. Everybody in this movie gives a truly bizarre performance.
I think they're all in different movies.
No, I disagree. I agree that everybody gives a solid performance. I think everybody's playing this straight.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody and John Travolta and Nicolas Cage are in it.
And do you know where the end of this movie came from? It came from another movie that we watched and reviewed on the podcast.
What's that?
Patriot Games.
Was there an orphan boy?
The boat chase at
well,
the end.
Okay. You know, the boat chase was
the
actually...
anchor swinging around.
There's that. Sure.
We've seen this before. Lots of this movie we've seen before.
It's like, did Harrison Ford end up with Sean Bean's kid at the end of Patriot Games?
When was Patriot Games? What year was that?
92.
Okay. All right. I know John Woo had planned on that boat chase for a whole different movie, but managed to wedge it in this movie because this was his chance at a $20 million movie at the time, which is a big deal.
$20 million? This movie was budgeted way more than that.
What was the budget for this movie?
Maybe I want to say it was $80
million. Okay, $80 million, sorry.
Yeah, $80 million estimated, gross of $112.
That's got to be just domestic, right?
Yeah,
I would assume.
Because this, I mean... Yeah, this is such a good movie. So, let's start off just with the title. Face Slash Off. Do you know why it's called Face Slash Off?
Because they slash his face off?
First of all, I mean, I guess Face Off is a kind of a pun. But the reason why, because everybody told John Woo, just take the slash away. Just have the movie called Face Off. And he's like, I'm not going to do that because people are going to think it's a hockey movie.
Who would think it's a hockey movie?
I'm telling you.
He clearly overestimated the American audience.
No.
Maybe other parts of the world.
Do you know who thought it was a hockey movie? One of the first actors they offered a lead role to. Johnny Depp.
Get out of town.
He was going to do it until he found out it was not a hockey movie.
Tell me you're making that up.
He's making it up.
We'll never know. So, originally written in 1990, before Patriot Games, the script was optioned by producer Joel Silver. And then eventually it went to producer Michael Douglas, who actually wanted to star in it alongside Harrison Ford.
Would it be a very different movie?
Oh, yeah. And then...
It would be like Space Cowboys.
Well, then he took over as producer... And they originally wanted Arnold Schwarzenegger and Sylvester Stallone to play the two leads.
That would have been another different movie.
But they eventually got John Travolta and Nicolas Cage. And Nicolas Cage apparently didn't want to do it because he didn't want to be a villain. But then he found out that he was going to be a good guy for most of the movie and decided to do it.
Wait, he didn't want to be a villain because of what? Con Air?
No, he didn't. He just didn't want to be a villain. No, he was a hero in Con Air.
Well... Con Air was complicated because he was a con.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. But yeah, no, I mean, this was probably peak Cage, right?
This is peak Cage.
When was The Rock?
Oh, that's true. Maybe Rock was peak Cage. This has got to be peak Cage performance, though.
The Rock was before this, right?
Not much, if.
No, I think it went The 96. Rock, Con Air, Face Off.
When was Con Air then? Was Con Air the same year as this?
Hang on. 97.
Yeah, okay. This was Pete Cage.
I want to see every version of this movie that you just described, Eric.
Okay, Face Off and Con Air came out 3 weeks apart.
That's amazing.
That seems silly and also completely possible.
June 6, 97 was Con Air. June 27, 97 was Face Off.
Wow.
So 97 was apparently a big year for Mr. Cage.
This is where he was able to buy Superman or what, Action Comics number one, and build his mausoleum pyramid. And I think he bought a T-Rex skull too, right? That he had to give back. Nicolas Cage was living every boy's dream. So,
yeah.
The movie starts off with September 1991. A Hallmark moment where John Travolta has his six-year-old son on the carousel. And they're going round and round, just having a good time at Griffith Park in Los Angeles.
Creepy. Creepy.
It's fine. It's not creepy until he does the weird face thing.
Yeah, the weird face thing I didn't get, but I realized it had to be.
No, he's trying to pull his face off.
He was foreshadowing.
This movie has a theme.
It does. Yeah, it leans heavily on that theme. Mm-hmm. So he does the face thing, which somebody must do in real life. Certainly not anybody I know, but somebody's got to do it.
If you did that to me, I would punch you in the nose.
There's no way anybody does that in real life. Nothing that happens in this movie happens in real life.
That's true. Then we have Caster Troy, played by Nicolas Cage, who's got a sniper rifle.
And has my second favorite movie mustache ever.
What's your first favorite movie mustache?
Kurt Russell in Tombstone.
Oh, of course. I don't know, Sam Elliott in anything.
I would have gone with Magnum P.I.
Well, that's true. More of a TV mustache, but yes.
Still. Well, Tom Selleck, any Western starring Tom Selleck. Because I've seen all of those because of our grandmother, so.
Oh, yeah. So, Caster Troy is going to shoot Archer. And when he gets a clean shot, he shoots him in the back. And the bullet goes through Archer and kills a child. This movie killed a child in the first 2 minutes.
Also, there was no foundation to this in the beginning of the movie. This is just a cold open.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably if you want to get me on board and you're going to kill a kid, you're going to have some background before I'm going to be on board with that.
Sort of a Pet Cemetery thing where you got to learn to like the kid. Or at least the family.
Yeah, or at least understand the motive of the crazy, deranged lunatic dude.
Did you see his mustache?
But that's
I think
the thing.
That gave you all the backstory you needed.
Mustaches don't kill. People kill.
Eventually, we're going to talk about Wonder Woman. And I want to say that... No, because I have things to say about Wonder Woman. Have you guys seen Wonder Woman?
How do you get there from here?
Mm-hmm. Well,
I've seen Wonder Woman.
Here's the how I get from there to here. This was a better cartoon movie than Wonder Woman. Everything about this movie is cartoony, but it's mostly practical effects. I mean, there's some really bad green screen at a couple of times, but for the most part, this is crazy, wacky, but all practical effects, and they're telling such a simple story that it's just beautiful. Because we have the anguish of a father whose son is killed in his arms. And then we go 6 years later. And Archer is the field agent in charge of the FBI's Los Angeles field office. And he's been pursuing Caster Troy ever since. Apparently Caster Troy is something of a Bond villain.
Yeah. He's what? He's a terrorist for hire.
Yes, and he is a comic book character. It's so great. It's perfect for Nicolas Cage. He's got signature weapons. He's got flourishes. He's got that Lawrence of Arabia opening where you have his coat blowing in the wind. He's got it's great. And John Travolta, who's, again, Archer, he's got a crack team of FBI agents, including one Margaret Cho.
I know. Margaret Cho kicks some ass in this movie.
Well, a stunt woman with the Margaret Cho wig on.
Still.
It was the stunt actors in this were pretty
obvious.
That is one of the hidden gems of this movie.
Yes.
that it has a really obvious entire second cast.
Exactly. Which is great. The second cast did a great job. I have no problems with it. So Archer is relentlessly chasing Castor Troy. And then we see Castor Troy dressed as a some sort of priest at what turns out to be the L.A. Convention Center. And he's putting together a bomb. And then he is the overactingest overacting guy ever. It's so great. I love every second of it. He is Al Pacino-ing up the... He's got a great ass, except that he's doing it for the Lord. He's dancing crazy. He's doing Harvey Weinstein on the choir girl. He's on 11.
I think they call that the Spacey. Oh, wait, it was a girl.
And she was way older. Everything. I love everything about all these scenes. It's great. It's ridiculous to the point of being cartoony, and I can't get enough.
Yeah, usually when you think of a director who's just letting Nicolas Cage do whatever Nicolas Cage wants, you think of like a really terrible movie. But this works so well in this movie.
No, I think you were right in the first part of that sentence.
So then we find out that Castor's got a brother named Pollux.
Of course he does.
Because that's what you do. There's a whole thing in the IMDb trivia how Sean Archer, Sagittarius is an archer, and Castor and Pollux are the twins in Gemini, and there's a Zodiac. No, not buying it. Nah.
Nope.
But
so the numerology of their names, if you add all the numbers in their letters or their names, it ends up spelling out the title of the movie.
Exactly, with the slash. Slash is a 14, by the way.
The judges would have also accepted Schwa.
And the guy who plays Pollux, his name is Alessandro Nivola. I don't know who he is, but he did remind me of Liam Gallagher.
Yes, yeah. And he has such a weird affect throughout this whole movie. I've seen him in other things, and he's a normal dude. But in this movie, he spends the entire time kind of talking like this. And
the implication is he's on antipsychotic medication.
Yeah, well, it's such a weird choice.
No,
but it works.
No, it's a weird choice. Yes,
it's a weird choice. But in this movie, it's a weird choice.
No. Compared to Cage and Travolta, this is a subtle, nuanced performance.
That's true.
It's great. And so Castor and Pollux are getting aboard a private jet, and they're Castor is uncomfortably sucking on the tongue of a flight attendant who turns out to be an FBI agent.
No. She's sucking on his tongue.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, she's sucking on his
tongue. He's telling her his skill at eating a peach.
Yes, yeah.
He could eat a peach for hours.
It's so cringy and perfect. And then I have in my notes, blah, 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 cars, plane, helicopter. Blah, 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 warehouse gunfight, quips, Pollux is arrested, Castor is killed, or so we think. And I know I'm blah, blah, blahing it, but these are quality action scenes. They're goofy, but they're fun, and they're all John Woo. I mean, these are like Hong Kong action scenes.
Yes, there's a lot of jumping in the air, firing guns.
Yeah, two guns, one gun in each hand.
Inexplicable 360s.
Yes, absolutely. No, this is all trademark John Woo.
Physics-defying movements.
Later, we have dubs. I mean, we have all of these things.
Dubs.
Yeah. It's ridiculous fun.
Yeah. And this is mid-late 90s, so like the long flowing coats everywhere.
The slow-mo flaps in the breeze.
Yeah. Yeah. Bad hair.
Yeah, see, now when the James Bond movie did like the weird slow-mo to fast cuts, it did not work.
Oh, but you're going to say this one did.
100% totally. It worked.
Every time.
Because this is a Jackie Chan Hong Kong movie mixed up with like an American thriller mixed up with like a Marvel comic movie before Marvel comic movies were cool. I mean, the Punisher is one of the characters in this movie.
Yeah, we haven't even gotten to the point where they cut the faces off and swap them.
Yeah, it's not even there yet. Exactly. Yeah, we have probably $20 million worth of special effects now at this point in the movie, and I don't even think we got much past the first credits. We haven't even set up the whole point of this movie yet. And we have a helicopter stopping a plane from taking off. It's pretty great. And we have a crazy warehouse scene where, yeah, there's all this jumping and 8 million types of weapons all being shot at once.
And just so happens they are testing a prototype jet engine.
Oh, they got everything. They got it all.
Yeah, well, that of course you'd have that at a private airstrip.
Yeah. So...
Okay, but so Brother Jay, you at least will admit that the Castor Troy character, as played by both Nick Cage and John Travolta, is way more likable than the Sean Archer character, right? Like, you like Castor better than Archer.
I don't even know where to begin to unpack that sentence. I don't like either of them. Neither of them are likable for different reasons. Are you asking me the story that I like better out of the two of them, or the acting ability of Nicolas Cage versus John Travolta?
No, I'm talking about the characters.
No, I don't like either of them.
Oh, see, to me, Castor Troy, he's not a monster. He's the devil. Because he's so much fun, and he's charismatic. And yet he doesn't care. And Sean Archer is more of the saintly character, who is not fun. He's a stick in the mud.
Castor's barely competent without his brother.
Well, together, you know, again, the twins, the Gemini.
Well,
no.
He's a devil.
No, he's super competent. No, Castor is fine. He does fine. He's just not a mastermind. He's not the brains in the operation. He's the muscle. But he's also the charisma, because Pollux doesn't have the charisma. Castor actually is Liam, and Pollux is Noel.
That could be.
You don't think? Is Brother Jay awake?
No, I'm awake.
It. Okay, are you frozen?
I'm not engaging in this travesty.
Okay, all right. Well, so at the end of this whole thing, Pollux gets arrested, and we think Castor's killed. Of course, we don't. Castor's not killed. It was called Face Off. So, Archer returns home. We get to meet his wife, who's played by, don't tell me,
Joan Allen.
Joan Allen, yes. Who, they were going to cast a younger wife and have her be stepmom to the daughter. But John Woo was like, no, she's perfect.
She was perfect.
She was
perfect,
I think so. And Dominique Swain as the stepdaughter was great.
I just was hoping she would get shot.
The comically emo stepdaughter.
It was comic, but, you know, again, this is a cartoon movie. It's great. Mm-hmm. So these are all broad strokes. There is no fine brushing in this movie. It's all broad strokes. And I love it. But okay, Archer goes back and his office is clapping because he finally caught the bad guys. But he's not a fun guy. He does he takes the bottle of champagne and reads out the names of the people killed in the operation, which, you know, as a leader is probably a good thing to do, but not so fun.
Yeah, he's a buzzkill.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, nobody cares, including the audience, about the people that died.
Exactly, yes.
At the airport.
They jumped through so many hoops so that John Travolta's character doesn't kill, or sorry, that the Sean Archer character doesn't kill people in this movie. They do a lot of working around to make sure that everybody that gets killed by somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
But it's great.
But hey, we get the special guest appearance of the iOmega Zip Drive.
I know. I remember the Zip Drives. Some pretty... And you know those high-tech, sexy graphics? the best. Yeah.
I know. I expected them to like whip out a banner from print shop.
Exactly. So this sets up what should be in a lesser movie, the big bad thing, the ticking clock. And that's the big old bomb that we had seen Castor set up. Well, now we find out that finally Archer and the FBI finds out that there is a big old bomb and it's going to go off. And, well, at least Archer believes it, even if the other guys don't believe it. And so now we have a ticking bomb, literally, that we have to save the world, or at least Los Angeles, or at least part of Los Angeles. And as was in the trivia, I think John Woo mentioned that this was the bomb with the longest timer he's ever seen in a movie. He's like, this was set up as long as you needed to get that plot point done, which is pretty great. But I think they did something clever later. But anyway, so we got this ticking time bomb. And so we have to find out where this bomb is. And Pollux isn't going to tell anybody. So what do we do? Well, CCH Pounder comes in and says, we have a solution for this. All you have to do is pretend to be Castor Pollux. Castor Troy. Go and talk to your brother and get the information. Simple. Just switch faces. You got the body.
Yeah, they have new anti-inflammatories. It'll be fine.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, inflammation is an issue. But Archer doesn't really like that idea because it's so silly. And he's like, no, no, which is a great deal of his character work in this movie, actually.
Yeah, because he is humorless and is afraid of fun.
Yes. So instead, he's going to go interrogate some all of Castor's bad gang, his group of other villains and henchmen, including peak Gina Gershon.
And peak Nick Cassavetes.
Oh, yes. Oh, absolutely peak Nick Cassavetes. What do we know with Nick Cassavetes from?
Face Off.
Okay, yeah, that's all we need to. He's great in this. Yeah, it was his choice to shave his head. They didn't ask him to. He thought it would be good for his character, and he was right. And Gina Gershon wasn't very over the top either.
I think it was also his choice to like give his sister a creepy kiss.
Yep, I think that was their choice. So is that two movies in a row with creepy kids, kisses, sibling kisses?
Apparently so.
Anyway,
what was the last one?
Novocaine.
Oh, do you know what Nick Cassavetes is supposed to be directing next?
What?
Roadhouse.
That's just stupid. Stupid, stupid, stupid. I assume he's the son of John Cassavetes?
Yes.
Or grandson, or nephew, whatever.
John Cassavetes, 1997 Farticus.
John or Nick?
John.
Well, John Cassavetes was a legendary...
I'm sorry, Nick.
Yeah, okay, yeah. He did The Wild Bunch and Straw Dogs.
Farticus is a 1997 film about an old man played by Abe who would get the walking farts every time a beautiful woman would enter the room.
Well, that is a golden premise.
Oh, we'll put it on the list for next week. It will be an improvement over this film.
I'm telling you.
A virtual breath of fresh air.
Wake up, Dougie. So,
that was creepy.
We learn that Archer's actually kind of, he's not a nice guy because he also threatens to take away Gina Gershon's child unless she gives up where the bomb is and she doesn't know, whatever. And he also sticks a gun into the eye socket of Nick Cassavetes, but it doesn't work. So he's going to have to say, well, why not? Okay, even though I told my wife that I'm going to give up this life and settle down and whatever, got to go in for one more mission. Getting too old for this shit. So goes in for the face surgery.
Oh, but wait, you get that great line where the scar won't move, but it will heal itself if you let it. You think that's going to come back later?
Of course. But then we have the first 3D printed thing I think I had ever seen, where we have the scene of the ear being created. We have all this whiz-bang technology. Blah, blah, blah surgery is what I have in my notes. And it's great. Again, it's a comic book plot. He's got to go be inserted into the prison to do this mission, and nobody knows he's there. And, of course, you know something bad's going to happen. He's going to get trapped there. That's how these things work out. But it sure is stylish.
It's silly, and it's over the top. But Nick Cage and John Travolta do a great job of acting like each other.
Yeah.
They really do.
Yeah, I think so. Truly, I think they both do a great job in this movie. I think everybody's performance in this movie is pretty great, except for maybe Dominique Swain, and, you know, she didn't have a lot to work with. But, yeah, so we have the surgery, again, very flashy. We have the anguish reaction of his son's killer's face being on his body now, blah, blah, blah. We've got this whole larynx voice thing, which takes care of that one other plot, you know, technical detail they don't have to worry about now.
Except they never explain how, since they have different blood types, which becomes a plot point later in the movie, how they managed to keep each other's skin intact without rejection.
Well, again,
science.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. If you've seen Looper, we don't have to get into the numbers on this. Have you seen Looper?
Nope.
Yes.
Yeah. Looper's pretty good, actually. I liked it.
After Primer, I'm really skeptical of movies with one-word titles that sound
mathy. Looper has the best scene where they talk about time travel ever.
No, Looper is the anti-Primer.
Sure.
No. Primer, no. Primer was heavy on science and, like, low on action. And Looper is all action and very little science.
Just double feature it with Source Code.
Actually, we don't need to revisit Source Code. Although I do think we need to revisit the original Manchurian Candidate. But that's a whole other thing.
Why do you think that?
Because we have a president who is basically Angela Lansbury's husband.
We're all going to be dead in a couple months anyway. I don't know that we care.
No, I don't think so. I think we'll be fine. Our faith in institutions is already gone, but other than that, we'll just build new institutions.
I think once the Winter Olympics start, it's all going to go downhill from there. So.
Oh, that's kind of a funny joke. Is it going to slalom downhill?
Ba-dum-bum.
Wow, you are humorless tonight, brother.
I had to waste 2.5 hours of my damn life with this crap fest.
That is the other thing. This is a 2-hour and 18-minute movie, and it is wonderful. Didn't even think about breaking it up into two sections.
I had to stop 3 times.
I had to stop 3 times just so I can take a breath from my excitement, digest all the wonderfulness, and then go right back in, because I didn't think my system could take all of the joy and adrenaline that one continuous viewing would have given me.
I woke my wife up for the magnetic boots. And she wasn't even mad.
Yes, the magnetic boots. Who have you seen the movie Box Trolls?
And the super secret prison.
Not Box Trolls. Actually, the movie Trolls.
Yes.
Yeah, where they play that gorilla song when they go to the what are the bad guys called?
Bergens,
yeah. I'm happy. I'm feeling glad I got sunshine in a bag. I'm useless, but not for long. The future is coming on. They're all walking around like they've got magnetic boots on.
Mm-hmm. By the way, after working on platforms, it just makes me appreciate Erewhon even more.
Well, yeah, you realize they had to do, they had the option of actually filming a lot of stuff on an actual platform, but they couldn't because of the dangers of shooting all the weapons on a real platform and all the explosions and whatnot. Yeah, so we go to jail. And Erewhon is like an anagram for nowhere. And we got the evil warden, who could have been played by J.W. Pepper, but wasn't.
He very nearly was.
Erewhon is the best prison ever. Amnesty International doesn't know they exist. I mean, this is actually, pre-Guantanamo, right? So
it is.
I mean, it's not pre-Guantanamo Bay, but it's pre-Guantanamo prison. Open knowledge of Guantanamo prison. Yeah, and so this whole magnetic floor thing, so they can keep track of prisoners, because visually keeping track of them doesn't seem to work, apparently. I don't know how that works. And we have the large TVs showing, or a TV array showing nature programming and outdoor scenes. And we get to see Thomas Jane, and we get so much Nicolas Cage acting, tormented acting. It's so great. I love it. Love every minute of it.
He's Caster Troy.
I'm Caster Troy. It's good to be Caster Troy. Ridiculous. But ridiculous like a fox.
Yep. And there's a prison, so we get a couple prison fights.
Yes. Fun. Over-the-top prison fights.
With the dude from season 2 of The Wire.
Dubroff or whatever.
Yes.
So then we go back to the clinic, and we have the real Caster Troy waking up very conveniently, apparently in a building all by himself.
Because nobody would be monitoring some deranged, jailed, terrorist lunatic to make sure his vital signs were constant.
Also, an amazing performance by Nicolas Cage. He doesn't even have a face, but he's amazing.
Well, okay, so...
His face is off. Face off.
Face off. So one of the... I just... When they got to that scene later on with Nick Cassavetes and Nicolas Cage...
Oh, no, see, it's a visual, which nobody at home will be able to see. Face on, face off.
Oh, it's so great. So one of the trademarks of John Woo is reflections. But I think they did the greatest thing ever. This was, Brother Jay, can you look up what year was, Hellraiser. When was the original Hellraiser?
87.
87? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So they had the technology to do the whole skinless guy thing if they wanted to. But they didn't have to, because they could do the makeup and just see him from the back, but only see his actual, faceless face in the reflection, in the glasses, which is great. I love that part. Yeah, it was fun. It was subtle.
Yeah. Oh, subtle, huh?
And then...
Mm-hmm. It was subtle like 100 pairs of scissors.
No, I think that part of it, that one part of it in the movie was subtle. So, back at Erewhon, Archer and Pollux are talking, and Archer manages to get the location of the bomb from Pollux through clever trickery. And then immediately when he gets it, says, "Ha, I gotcha, dummy." Cause that's what they would do.
Was that a Cosby impression you just did?
Actually, it was more of a Sanford and Son.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Okay. I could see that.
Not an impression.
But then he realized he was still in prison.
Yes, exactly.
He's like, ha ha.
Yeah. Okay. That's okay, because in one day or whatever, my buddy Tito is going to come and get me out of prison. So he's waiting. He gets sent to the Sally Port or whatever. And who comes through that door? Not Tito. Instead, it's Caster Troy. But he looks like Sean Archer. So imagine when they come together for the first time.
They have a face off.
They have a face off, and it's all very anguishy for Nicolas Cage, and it's all very smug for John Travolta, and it seems they to suit
have had
both.
They should have had a Pulp Fiction dance off.
he gives the iconic line, "Ooh wee, you good looking."
It's so great. And we have the crumbling spirit of the real Archer, Nicolas Cage, and the smug John Travolta. But also, there's repeated imagery of the pouring gasoline on and setting fire to all the special agents and, I guess, the surgeon and everything who did the surgery. So all of the people that knew who he was have been immolated.
And all the people that could potentially help him.
It's interesting, though, the flashback, because it's a scene that he has never actually seen, so it's... We're basically getting a flashback of a description.
That's illustrative to us.
Yeah, I suppose.
It's
stylish.
It's in Caster's brain. He's reliving the moment.
Perhaps.
As he's relaying it as a fantasy, as a little bit of cinematic masturbation.
Well, and he knows that he killed Tito because he's wearing his wedding ring.
That
was given to Tito.
Oh, you think that was going to come back later?
No.
Again, subtle, like a pair of scissors.
This is not a movie about subtlety.
No. This is, again, broad strokes. Speaking of broads, Caster as Archer goes to Archer's house, drives by it, actually, overshoots it. Runs into Eve, Archer's wife. Acts nothing like the real Archer would, but instead is sexy Archer. So that makes Eve hot and bothered and intrigued.
Date night.
Woo.
Smoking.
I hate to see you go, but I love to watch you leave, or something. And then he reads Eve's diary in the thing about how it's a sexless marriage.
No, that's Archer's diary.
I'm sorry. Oh, it's not Eve's diary. It's Archer's diary.
This is 100% Archer's diary.
Dear diary,
I'm so lame and boring.
Exactly. But he's distracted by hearing Papa's got a brand new bag playing out of Archer's daughter's bedroom. And she's in there wearing next to nothing, talking to her boyfriend. And there's this weird daddy-daughter stuff. It's just over-the-top goofy. The fact that she'd be listening
How are you gauging over-the-top?
Well, that's
in relation to the rest of this movie.
No.
How do you quantify over the top? In what other aspect? Go ahead.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. This is on the same level as the rest of this movie. And by that, I mean awesome.
You have to speak in absolute terms because you cannot speak in relative terms.
No, there is so much. I mean, I swear, part of the reason that John Travolta is like 50 pounds heavier than Nicolas Cage in this movie is because he is chewing so much scenery in everything. Nicolas Cage is trying to hold it together. Like his performances are sort of minimal, and John Travolta acting like Nicolas Cage is all over the place. Jason is fashioning a noose out of his Depeche Mode scarf.
Hey, what's more appropriate than hanging myself with a Depeche? That's like the most emo thing ever.
Yeah.
Not as emo as listening to James Brown in your underwear.
Yes. With the nose ring.
Well, at least by this point, James Brown wasn't dead yet.
True. He was crossing state lines to date a 14-year-old, though. So, you know, again, who's channeling who? Spacey or Brown? I don't know.
I was going to say.
Yeah. So.
Then we get the electroshock scene.
Well, okay. But so we have this setup where Castor, as Archer, gets Pollux, gives him a plea bargain or whatever to get him out of jail. And so they all wave their goofy wave at Archer as Castor in prison. To figure out how to do this, but yeah, so we have Nicolas Cage as Archer in prison, full of anguish, and Pollux and Castor out in the real world, and Castor as Archer is now going to take over everything. He's going to actually take a bite out of crime to basically, although it's not super explicit, what he's doing is he's taking out all his own competition for crime. He is really actually a Superman villain in this movie. He's gone from a Bond villain to a Superman villain.
And now Archer, played by Nicolas Cage, turns into like the most idealized version of Jason Bourne.
Yes. And, okay, this is where, you know, that big bomb, the ticking time bomb, that we think that Archer's going to have to solve that from jail? Nope. The new plan is that Castor, as Archer, is going to be a hero by defusing the bomb single-handedly, which turns out he does single-handedly. With a lot of scenery chewing. So we have the ticking time bomb off the table right at this point, which is pretty great. I thought that was a fun little twist.
Archer is a hero. He's getting promoted.
Yep. He apologizes for being such a bore to his staff. He's making time for his wife. He's trying to be the best guy possible.
Margaret Cho realizes that being an actor is not her calling.
Based on the acting in this movie?
Yes. Yes, she is up against the powerhouse performances of Travolta and Cage.
Exactly, yes. Back in jail, Archer is a broken man. And he needs to break out of prison. So, what does he do? He asks somebody, hey, how do we break out of prison? So by the way,
yes, Thomas Jane.
Yeah, don't knock it if you haven't tried it. I mean, that should be your first thing. Plan A, ask somebody if they know how to do what you want to get done. Don't overthink it. So, notes, blah, 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 prison break. A lot of casualties in this prison break.
Yeah, and there just happens to be these random giant glass jugs of sulfuric acid.
Yeah, yep.
Well, it is a platform. There's stuff like that on platforms.
All over the place, right? Yeah.
Especially when they're used as prisons with magnetic boots.
But the thing is, we don't know it's a platform yet, right?
No,
we've never seen the outside of this prison yet, which is great. So, but we were going to soon because we have this prison break.
Also, how are there fireworks in the electrical grid of this prison?
Oh, there's
those are just sparks.
Yeah, there's a
lot of stuff. Were fireworks. There were literal fireworks sound effects. It was like fucking V for Vendetta going off.
Yeah, they accidentally ignited some barrels of TNT.
Yeah, exactly. No, and at some point, actually, Archer had to like swing across a thing with Princess Leia on as the stormtroopers were shooting off in the distance.
Also, he lost his shoes almost nearly in a fashion of Die Hard.
There you go. Yeah, see?
Instead of glass, it was fire.
Well, there was a strategic part of his escape to get the boots off.
Because jumping from that height from a platform, the water wouldn't kill him.
They hired a stuntman for that.
Oh, sorry.
You barely notice that's not Nicolas Cage jumping like 100 feet or whatever off the platform. But now, so we have the jailbreak. We've got Castor back as Archer, and it's Michael's birthday, Michael the dead son's birthday. And so Castor gets basically shamed into going to the cemetery. And he is not very subtle in his, when he's not amused by something, he barely holds it together. You should see him at a funeral. Yeah, if your prospective boss is sitting at the funeral, the person he's going to succeed, and he's basically fingering his gun the entire time, maybe you should, seek a transfer at that point. But anyway, yeah, so we have prison break. We've got Archer trying to call in and talks to the wife, but his voice is different. And then he tries to call in and talk to the stodgy old guy at the FBI who's the boss. And instead, Castor picks up the phone, who's onto him.
Blah, blah, blah. Somewhere over the rainbow.
Yes, yes. So where does Archer go? Archer goes to Sasha and Dietrich's house, Gina Gershon and Nick Cassavetes.
And that's where you get to hear tricky Christian sounds, which we've discussed before on the podcast.
We get to hear what?
The song Christian Sands by Tricky.
Christian Sands?
Yes.
Huh.
We've even discussed the song before.
Oh, I'm sure. I'll have to put in a clip now. So, but we have Archer.
We get to see Marvin from Reservoir Dogs. He has a nice appearance.
Yeah, we get to see also. It's fun. It's silly, but it's fun.
We get a big pissing contest until there's an actual face-off.
Well, yeah, we have the SWAT team who cares the least about collateral damage. We have we've got drugged Archer. We've got
talking with Dietrich about wanting to take the fake Archer's face off.
Face off, face off, face off.
They
face
say
off,
face off about 12
it's
times.
So great. We've got a little slap and tickle between him and Gina Gershon, although they don't actually sleep together. They've got. It's all sorts of stuff. It's all sorts of fun.
Turns out her kid is Castor's kid.
I actually wrote down at this part of the movie, I don't think I've seen a pair of scissors yet.
We got Castor and Pollux on the phone together. Because Castor's actually at Archer's house and he's on the phone with Pollux about how Archer's having fun being him. but he's interrupted because we have Danny Masterson, who brings home Dominique Swain and doesn't treat her very well. Tries to get a little Weinstein on her, or maybe Dustin Hoffman, or possibly Kevin Spacey, or, you know, any one of a number of people now. The president of the United States. I mean, God knows. Oh, so anyway, so he goes out and takes care of business.
You left out Brett Ratner.
Brett Ratner. Yeah, it's all the usual suspects. So we have this whole like touching father-daughter scene between the not father and not daughter, where he gives her a butterfly knife and tells her what to do. Yeah.
You think that's going to come back later? That was the pair of scissors I was missing.
There you go. Yeah. So we've got genuine family moments in here. And we go back to the...
You're a family of psychopaths.
Well, we go back to the penthouse.
Well, they are.
And we've got, of course, Archer still coming off his drug thing. And Sasha, again, this is where the slap and tickle comes in. And then they have a serious conversation. And then he meets Castor's son, who looks a lot like his own dead son. But then, blah, 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 big shootout at the penthouse.
Yeah, because clearly none of the FBI did any due diligence to see if perhaps there were any innocents in the facility. Like, children.
No, we don't care. Everybody's in there is guilty. We got one ambition in mind. We're going to take it out. And all of the FBI guys are stormtroopers. They're all going to get shot.
And they can't hit the broadside of a bar.
No, no. But, you know, who's not going to be shooting him? It's Nicolas Cage as Sean Archer. Because he doesn't kill anybody.
And WTF, why the hell over the rainbow? What is wrong with people?
Because they have the rights.
And it's ironic.
Yeah.
How is it ironic?
It's ironic because it's a slow song that is providing the soundtrack to a balls-of-the-wall action scene.
Yeah. Plus, it's a little kid trying to dream a better life for himself, just like the song has. And we have all this Hong Kong action, which is great. Did I tell you I watched, I ran into Kill Bill Volume 1 the other day on one of those cable channels, and it was, I thought it was going to be one of those things where, oh, I'll watch this for a little while, and if it's good, I'll just watch the rest of it. It was bad. It was so bad. Even the Never action scenes were bad. Did Never not like it. I liked a lot of the actors. I did not like this movie. The action scenes in this movie in Face Off are so much better. Sorry, Quentin. You're no Hong Kong director.
Can we talk about why there was a room of giant freestanding mirrors all facing each other in a round?
If we must.
It was the porn set.
Oh. That's the mirror room. Huh.
Guess that could be one use.
Well, because it's John Woo, and he always has a scene where you have two people separated by a wall talking to each other.
It makes appearing as if the actors are doing 360s that much easier.
It looked amazing.
It was great. I liked it. It was goofy and cheesy and fun. Then we have the death of Pollux.
We have the death of Dietrich.
Death of Dietrich. Sasha somehow makes it.
He takes the time to tie his dead brother's shoe.
Yeah, that was lovely. That was cute. That was a good thing. That was a nice touch.
Callback from the beginning of the movie.
Yes. Yeah.
You keep saying that like it's a bad thing.
I know. This is a piece of art. This is weaving threads back into this tapestry of brilliance. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the next day, Castor goes to his office, and he's made Time Magazine Man of the Year in record time. Because it doesn't even seem like the end of the year, but I guess that's because it's California and that seasons never change. But he's brooding about the death of his brother. And he's now being told by his boss, Lazaro, that after the whole carnage at the penthouse shootout, he's now stopping the war on crime. But luckily, Castor leans in and gives him a karate chop heart attack.
He's better at that karate chop than James T. Kirk.
Yes. Although he did go to the James T. Kirk School of Karate Chop, which is odd because it's actually like 400 years in the future, right? Anyway, so Archer breaks into his house and talks to Eve, who's freaking out. But somehow, because he comes up with that memory that only Archer would know, blah, 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 and the blood type, blah, blah, blah.
Because it's the lamest story ever. That's how she knew it was her husband.
Well, she broke her tooth on a rye seed.
That didn't happen till the hospital later.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Continuity by Judgy J.
Blah, blah, blah. Eve's in on it now.
Yeah. Not quite, but almost, yeah. But Eve manages to subtly take a blood sample and go to the hospital. Blah, blah, blah. He follows her to the hospital. He's following her around a lot. But then, of course, Castor's all has found it out. So he shows up at the hospital. And they have that whole smoke screen with the burn victim who was just used as a prop. Poor guy. And then, in the first time I started to question the plot of this movie, they discussed that, okay, so now Castor's about to be promoted into the being the agent in charge or whatever, and because of the Karate Chop heart attack of the agent in charge before, and that will make him virtually untouchable because he'll have all the powers of the chief of whatever. The only place he's vulnerable is the funeral, which I don't understand. I don't understand any of the setting of the funeral. And I realized they had to carve away all the walls so that there's an opportunity for doves to fly in. Because there is a dove wrangler on this movie. But I don't understand why the funeral would be a good place. Seems like he'd be surrounded by people during the entire funeral. But nope, I guess not.
Oh, it's sort of half funeral, half church service.
Yeah, I suppose.
I don't think John Woo has been to a lot of American funerals.
No. It seemed very Shinto. Maybe that's racist.
And the worst Latin recitation.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Yeah. Yeah, I didn't. Surely they would have had
some. Clearly, somebody doesn't know how to speak Latin.
No, do you think they made it up, or do you think. Because you think all you'd have to do is make a phone call and you could get the actual liturgy, right?
You think that?
I mean, he was, though. I was waiting for him to say, "My father plays dominoes better than your father."
It was pretty bad. Which is saying something for this movie.
Oh, it was great.
And the Gregorian chants. I kept expecting Enigma to show up.
Yeah.
Za, dimwa.
It would have been perfect.
It would have been. Right time, too, huh? Mm-hmm. So, no, I like the little quip before we get to the funeral. We're back in the hospital as he's leaving, and he doesn't buy her story, and he just mumbles to himself or to his henchmen, lies, deceit, mixed messages. This is turning into a real marriage. Blah, 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 open-air church fight.
One of my favorite parts of the hospital scene is when Eve realizes what's been happening. She says something like, "I've been living with that monster for a week." So the entire plot of this movie has only taken the course of a week.
Yeah, exactly. He's time man of the year in a week. You think they wouldn't have been able to do the voting?
He has been accomplishing a lot of shit in a week.
Well, he's not Sean Archer. He's Castor Pollux. He's getting shit done.
Castor Troy.
I'm sorry, Castor Troy. Yeah, he can't see Castor Pollux. Sean Archer took 6 years to set up this whole thing and only got him by accident because of a purchase of a plane ticket. No. Castor Troy is time man of the year in a week. So, church fight. Boat fight. It's so much fun. The fact that you've got the police boat with fully automatic weapons and expendable cops, because they just get killed immediately.
And two entirely different actors for the whole scene.
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. No, because we have what is it, barefoot water skiing. We've got all sorts of stuff. It's great. They had a contract with a Wildcraft or whatever those boats are. Fantastic. And then it ends with a spear gun.
A shot to the heart. No. You're to blame. Yeah, you give you give love a bad name.
Actually, they shot him in the side like Jesus. That was a plot element. He's actually crucified at the end. Although I do like the scene where he tries to destroy his own face. It reminds mm-hmm. me of one of the few jokes I know, and I can't tell it well, so I'm going to try. About
you're going to tell it. Okay.
I'm going to tell a joke. Yeah. Street joke, whatever.
It's hopefully not a visual.
No. It's completely theater of the mind. So imagine you have an Englishman and a Frenchman and a guy from the Bronx who are on a mission through the Amazon jungle, an expedition.
This is Apocalypse Now?
And they get caught by a cannibalistic tribe who is going to eat them, but also skin them and make human skin canoes, because that's one of the things that this tribe does. But they're not savages. They say, you know, allow you to choose your method of death, but we are going to kill you now. So the Englishman says, you know, I'll choose a gun. He says, God save the queen, and he shoots himself. And the Frenchman says, well, I'll take the knife. And he's like, Vive la France! And he stabs himself with the heart, whatever. And the guy from the Bronx asks for a fork. They give him a fork, and he starts stabbing himself all over his body. And they're like, oh, what are you doing? He's like, I'm fucking up your boat. And scene.
That was a good one.
It was better than this movie.
A joke by Pam Brovo. Also through the street, I'm sure, but she tells it better.
Also, at this point, I have to point out, no one thought to check anybody's fingerprints, because at no point did they swap fingerprints.
No, they absolutely did.
No, it's not called Handoff. That's the next movie in the series.
No, laser reconstruction of fingerprints. 100%.
Yeah, well, they did that. They did that toning and plumping or whatever. I guess, well, they only did toning because John Travolta, yeah, he had to be carved down into a Nicolas Cage shape.
Well, no, but then they had to plump up Caster.
Yeah, apparently, yeah. Just think about how long it took for them to make that dimple, or the chin dimple, cleft thing, whatever it's called. It's a dimple, it's not a cleft. But even he refers to it himself as this ridiculous face, which I think is great.
Do you think that Scientology swapped at the same time?
I don't think Nicolas Cage is a Scientology guy.
Travolta is.
Although I bet you I think he sleeps under a pyramid. I could be wrong.
I thought the end of that word was going to be very different.
So, we're not going to get into spacey territory. So, this is the scene where I thought Dominique Swain did not shine when she apologizes for shooting her dad. And we get the little boy that comes in and everybody says, hey, little guy, we've got a room for a little boy in the family. We've got a room all set up for you from our dead brother's son. It's probably got his stuff all up there.
Yeah, not creepy at all.
No, we got a whole deacon's bench full of mask toys to play with.
It's random. so random and specific to me. I don't understand.
We'll just take a Sharpie and cross out Michael and write Adam on top of everything.
Or maybe not.
No,
maybe
no, there's not. No way. They rename exactly. him Michael.
We're going to call you Michael. Yeah, you know your dead mom? We're not going to talk about her at all.
It's like when you adopt a pet and it takes, you know, a few weeks for them to get used to their new name. That's what happens to Adam.
Yeah. The new Michael, or they just call him Michael 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. So fade to black. And then I had to look up because the end credit song, which will be the beginning credit song for our podcast.
Has could it please?
The worst lyrics ever. The worst. I can't think of examples now, but the rhymes don't rhyme. They throw a lot of extra words in the lines. Shut your mouth up like a kid, scared to have a heart. Losing grip, what really matters, cause you don't know where to start. You wake up in the morning with a Starbucks bar fan. The things that you are so in tune with what you got paid. What's giving you the will to live is looking for revenge. The only life that you got left is hiding from the pain. What must have happened to your soul? Just the worst. And I thought, okay, this is like a Frank Stallone type band. This is just like an 80s hair band kind of wannabe kind of sound. But did you stay for the credits to see who did that song?
No.
I didn't even get to the credits. The movie went off immediately.
The song is so bad. Here, I'll play a little bit more of this with emphasis on the lyric. The heart you're building out of rock is turning into sand. Because you never took time to think what it means to be a man. You act like you got the answer when the questions never asked. I've been to where you're coming from, but the postcards weren't so bad. The knife I got has been sharpened on the miles that won't keep shut. I'd stab at you in the darkness, so try to shed some light. Your point of view is so meaningless if you ever had one at all. Well, all you seem to care about is who's gonna take the fall.
Oh, No. I did see. It was NXS.
Yes, it was. A name brand band.
I did not recognize them by sound.
No, it was crazy. And the lyrics were so bad. It was unbelievable. Oi. Please tell me that's an NXS song. Yeah, unbelievable. Oi. No, that's
EMF.
EMF.
Ah, motherfucker.
Okay, well, Ecstasy, motherfuckers, exactly, as a matter of fact.
Yeah. You got that part right. And just for the record, NXS did not do Right Here, Right Now either.
That was okay. Jesus Jones.
Yes.
Okay. Hey, I'm sure for the majority of NXS, until the guy did himself a belt Keith news Gerding. Thing. Yeah. We call it a Chris Cornell now. But I swear I thought they were named Inx for the longest time.
Oh, God.
Not my kind of music. It was unbelievable. Oh, I... Kaja Gugu. So, Brother Jay, do you have any final thoughts?
I think it was David Carradine that did the auto
rock. Yeah, it was David Carradine, yes. And the guy from Linkin Park, right?
It was Hutchins?
Yes. Michael Hutchins, yes.
Yeah. He did it too, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yep. Carradine, Hutchins, Cornell, whatever the guy is from Limp Bizkit or whatever it was.
Linkin Park.
Yeah.
Chester Bennington.
Same thing.
Bennington, sorry.
Yeah.
Ty Pennington, Guy Fieri. So, Brother Jay, a face-off. What's your verdict?
Do you even have any doubt?
Well, okay. So, what are your quibbles? Or no, okay. I'm sorry. I shouldn't have minimized you. What are your complaints about this movie?
This is a terrible movie. I can't even quantify how painful it was to watch this. How terrible from beginning to end. It's overacted. It's poor. The plot is awful. The action is unbelievable.
Have you no sense of fun?
I have lots of fun. This is not a fun movie. This is a terrible movie.
This is the Mississippi mud pie chocolate ice cream coffee dessert you get at Red Robin. This is decadence.
Well, and since I hate coffee desserts, there you go.
Let me ask you this. Are there any John Woo movies that you like?
Name one.
Hard Boiled. The Killer.
There's a killer. Mission Impossible 2.
Yeah.
Nope.
There were some more Tom Cruise movies, right? Oh, did he do who did The Rock? That was somebody else.
That was Michael Bay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, anyway. But, yeah.
Broken Arrow.
Oh, yes, there you go.
John Travolta. Yeah.
I've never seen that movie. That's a...
it's awful.
Samantha, what's her name, from Pump Up the Volume? And Kiefer Sutherland? Yes. Not Kiefer Sutherland. Christian Slater. And John Travolta.
And you're forgetting Howie Long.
Of course, I'm Howie Long. Okay, so if you were giving it a letter grade, or you're just judging us guilty.
This is a fail. This is an F. This is a fail of a movie. I didn't like it when I watched it in 97, and I don't like it any better now. Actually, I like it even less now, because I've now wasted 4.5 to 5 hours of my life on this. I'm never getting back.
Brother Drew, is it worth it?
Well, I'll put it this way. I think I think Brother Jay really hits the nail on the head. This movie is completely binary. It will either be an A or it will be an F for you, and you will know within the first couple minutes. I personally love this movie. I think it is completely over the top. It is not plausible. Everybody is hamming it up with no restraint, and it works. I think I have said the word amazing about 24 times during this podcast, because this movie, the fact that it exists is amazing. The fact that somebody took this ridiculous plot and put these two A-list stars at the primes of their career in it and just let them run wild is mind-boggling, but it works. It is so much fun. This is just a fun movie. It doesn't make sense. It's self-serious to the point of silliness. It's got weird family stuff, but it's just, if you're on board with it, it works. It's so much fun. It will go by so fast. Probably the fastest 2.5-hour movie I've ever seen. It's got magnetic boots. It's got weird Nick Cassavetes with two different colored eyes that they never even address. It's great.
See, that's one of my problems with this movie is it has a lot of over-the-top parts and then other parts that are seemingly normal. You should have gone over the top with everything and just either made it a futuristic movie and just gone with it or gone crazy with it. But the stupid futuristic elements, the RoboCop-esque or future-esque wannabe sci-fi aspects, had no business in this movie.
No, there was arguably that this one, the one impossible part of the movie was the surgery. Everything else is fine.
The magnetic boots?
The magnetic boots are stupid, but it's okay. It's like, the thing about this movie, this, to me, this is a comic book movie. This, and we'll get to Wonder Woman later, but
the giant 8-week bomb.
Yeah.
Have either of you seen the movie Wanted?
I saw most of it, I think. That's where they flick the gun to make the trajectory of the bullets change.
Yes, that's how they curve the bullets.
Yeah,
I mean, that is a movie taken from a graphic novel, but it's got the same sort of silliness, but it's just played in that movie. It's played completely seriously. Like it's not the level of camp in Face Off, and I think it suffers for it. I mean, I think Face Off gets the tone exactly right.
It also gets the pace right. This is a 2-hour and 18-minute movie. But the thing is, there's so much wacky stuff and like, again, scenery chewing. But they don't give you any time to think too hard about it. They don't want you to think too hard about it. This is not what this movie is about.
No, because you'd walk out.
Yeah, well, this is not what this movie is about. This is about a quick little fun thing. This is Demolition quick? Man.
This movie's not a quick movie.
Yeah, I think it is. I think it's really well-paced. I think it's great. I mean, yeah, there the scenes where it drags a little bit is the scenes of overacting anguish, which it's a masterclass in overacting. It's great. And they're doing it on purpose. That's the thing. This is not a poorly made movie. This is a very well made movie. Except for the green scene at the green screen at the end when the boats hit the dock or whatever and they go flying. Everything is pretty seamless. It looks great. All the actors look great. All of the stuntmen who are pretending to look like the actors from behind, they look great. You're right. They get to see you kind of see them change out in between scenes in real time. But that's okay.
I think I actually saw them tag.
Yeah, tag. Exactly. Reaching across the rope. Margaret Cho's trying to tag back in. This movie is just, it's pure fun. This is cheese whiz. This is, it's great. It's just, it's not meant to be serious. It's just meant to be fun, I think. And I think on that, it succeeds on every level. I love this movie. I can't think of anything that would make this movie better. The violence is cartoony. There's not a whole lot of, there's a lot of innuendo, but there's no real sex to have to warn the kids about. I think it's a movie for all ages. I think we should play it at the next PTA movie night. I don't think there's any reason why we couldn't. So
you're here.
I love it. I love it. So thank you, Brother Jay, for enduring. we can, you are throwing away your notes.
I'm going to my paper shredder.
Okay. I thought he kept all of those forever.
I do, but this, not this one.
It's theater of the mind.
I love it. I love it. It's Face Off, and we're ending it with a bit. It's great. Yes.
I love it. Awesome.
There. I've just purged it from my record, so I can move on with a clean conscience.
Amy, do we have housekeeping?
Don't forget that Sunday is November 5th, which is both Guy Fawkes Day, and for the Americans that observe, it's Daylight Saving Time End.
Oh, yeah. We should just replay the V for Vendetta, or like, I don't know. It's throwing old episodes into the queue. You should.
It's appropriate.
Is it appropriate? Do people get annoyed? Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think.
I don't know. I'm amused by it.
They don't have to listen to that free episode.
It's true. Yeah, that's true.
Also, people should, I mean, you know, ostensibly this will be released on the 5th, right?
This one, yeah.
So
no, we just guide him to it. Say, hey.
Because, I mean, I have a tradition that I watch V for Vendetta every year on November 5th. So
see, I can't. See, V for Vendetta is a cartoon movie. Granted, it's got more serious themes in it. But, and I guess it's more subtle. Well, okay. I guess there's not much of a comparison. I was going to say, it's how do you like that cartoon movie, graphic novel movie, and not like Face Off? But they're different animals. It really is about more subtlety, especially since Hugo Weaving actually literally wears a mask and is all subtle.
He never takes his face off.
Can you
it's the anti-face off.
Can you imagine if you replaced V with Nicolas Cage? I think it was the Comedy Film Nerds that used to sell a t-shirt called Ridiculous Cage. It's kind of funny. I think listener Becky from the United Nations of Horror got a t-shirt on her birthday recently that has a picture of Nicolas Cage and the title below it says John Travolta. Which I think is pretty fun. Conflating to the... Oh, by the way, back to Face Off for just a second, Brother Jay.
God.
No,
why?
No, in my head, I had actually kind of conflated Face Off and Con Air. Like, I know the difference between the two movies, but little individual... Like, I was wondering, oh, is Steve Buscemi going to show up in Face Off? It's like, no, that's a different movie. Turns out only a couple weeks apart, right? So,
put the bunny down.
He's got the little bitty babies in his hand. Anyway. Con Air. It's not going to be as good as Face Off, but I bet you it's fun.
All right. Eric, you had some Wonder Woman thing.
Well, I watched Wonder Woman with our mother a couple weeks ago, and I was really looking forward to it. And I thought that Gal Gadot, although it's hard to say, apparently that's how she pronounces her name. She was great, just fine. But I thought, honestly, the movie was too slow and a little bit too cartoony. Like, I'm glad she didn't have an invisible plane, but I didn't like her lasso. And the bad guy at the end was ridiculous. Also, it's a weird retcon thing because, you know, unlike Captain America, and I realize these are two different comic universes, And also, did you know that I think the word superhero is trademarked, owned jointly between DC and Marvel? So, like, Iron Horse Comics can't call their heroes superheroes? Yeah, anyway.
It's ridiculous. Yeah,
but that's the real world. Unlike Captain America, who had the luxury of being frozen between World War II and the present, Wonder Woman apparently just existed between World War I all the way through. So, I don't know, did she go back to the island for a while or whatever? But, I mean, theoretically, she hasn't aged, right? She's a Amazonian princess, blah, 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 godlike person.
They're superheroes. They don't act like normal humans.
She's a god, though, I think.
Well, much like there Thor, you go.
Again. Also, I saw the Justice League trailer, and I don't really care about comic book movies, frankly, a whole lot, but in the Justice League trailer, there's no Superman. Is that on purpose? Is Superman not in the Justice League movie?
Do you care about being spoiled for the last movie?
Oh, Superman versus Batman?
Yeah.
Oh, does he go into exile? Does Batman kill him?
He dies. Superman dies in that movie.
No.
Superman dies in that movie.
Okay, all right.
So I'm just spoiling it for everyone.
That would be ridiculous. Can't kill Superman. Well,
that's the story of the movie, the death of Superman. That's the arc.
Oh.
That's the plot of that movie. They took the death of Superman from the comic books.
So Henry Cavill or whatever his name is? No, Jim Caviezel. Henry Cassavetes, what is his name?
Cavill?
Yeah. He doesn't get to play Superman anymore?
I'm 100% certain he will be coming back.
Okay, I was going to say, because he was...
But they can't put him in any of the promotional materials because he's dead.
The Man from U.N.C.L.E. 2. It's going to be great.
Oh, I would love that movie.
Me too. I want to see it so bad. Can you imagine Face Off if it was Michael Douglas and Harrison Ford trying to act like each other? I see Michael Douglas as so much the John Travolta character.
I think they should turn Face Off into a franchise like Fast and the Furious, where they just pump out a new one like every 2 years with different pairs of actors or actresses.
I wish it could be just a weekly series. But I guess that would they'd jump the shark faster. But
Wonder Woman, I loved Wonder Woman all the way up until Danny Houston died.
Danny Houston was Scott whatever, Steve whatever.
No, he was Ludendorff, the bad guy.
Oh, okay.
Until he wasn't the main bad guy.
He was a cough drop?
Yes. Ricola. Yeah. That's a big subplot in the whole Motor universe. I didn't like Kevin Spacey's wife doing all that slow motion horseplay. But, oh well.
Kevin Spacey has a wife?
Well, House of Cards. Robin Wright.
Oh.
Santa Barbara.
Oh, yeah.
Kelly Capwell. Kelly
Capwell.
Jesus. Sorry.
What's wrong with you?
Yeah, well, it's your grandma's Kelly Capwell, though. She's pretty rough.
No, I liked her. I liked her. I like Connie Nielsen.
I like the cartoony nature of the fight scenes in the beginning where they shoot the three arrows at the same time and there's some of that slow motion kind of stuff. I got into that just fine, but frankly, toward the end especially, the CGI was just ridiculous. And it took me right out of it.
The final fight.
Maybe this is canon, but Wonder Woman and Captain America have basically the same shield and the same shield tactics.
Sure.
Yeah. Come on. Yeah, so I was disappointed with Wonder Woman. I mean, I guess I'll keep watching those movies, although I have yet to see any of the Star Wars movies, because I can't seem to care. There was a time, but I'm past that time. I know this is sacrilege, but...
I haven't even seen episodes 1, 2, and 3, so...
You know, They're not. They're both worse and better than I remembered. I've seen all of some of them and part of others of them, and I think off the top of my head, the first one is a lot more racist and long. The second one was much better than I remembered. And the third one, I just hated the end so much just because of the jumping around. And of course, you know, the younglings.
I watched part of the beginning of one part of it, and I was so annoyed that I just like, I have other things to do. I'm not wasting my time on this. So it just didn't captivate me enough to keep going. So,
well, I had to remind myself that they were actually legitimate kids movies.
Yeah.
So, but that's okay. Hey, if you want to see the Emoji Movie for free, Drew, tomorrow night.
That's cool. The PTA.
Yep.
Did I tell you that I watched Spider-Man? Have I mentioned?
Oh no, the Spider-Man Homecoming.
Mm-hmm.
And
it's really, really good.
Cool.
It's really good. They got Spider-Man right finally.
Excellent. That's good to hear.
Well, although, they've had enough practice.
You realize that that our mother was going to watch it, thought she would watch it, and then realized that. When she realized it was going to be Spider-Man being taught by Iron Man, she's like, oh no, I don't like Robert Downey Jr. in anything. So sorry, pass.
Oh, he's barely in it.
Oh, okay. She'll be happy to hear that.
She doesn't like Robert Downey Jr.?
6 minutes of screen time.
I'm not sure no, that's not true. She likes Robert Downey Jr. She doesn't like Tony Stark. And actually, I think it's probably because she doesn't like Gwyneth Paltrow. The combination of Tony Stark and Gwyneth Paltrow.
It's all that vagina steaming.
That's the jade egg.
You did see her Halloween costume this year?
I did not.
Whose? Mother's or Gwyneth Paltrow?
No, Mother was dressed like one of those jade eggs. Yeah, anyway.
She went as her character, but from the end of the movie Seven.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, that was clever. I mean, it's kind of a huge spoiler, but that's okay. It's 20 years old, right?
Yeah.
So. That's another movie where I wonder if it will hold up.
I don't have any desire to watch it again.
Yeah, it's kind of gritty.
Yeah, no. Well, once was enough.
But, you know, maybe. We'll see.
No.
Well, we got something to watch on Jason's birthday, Drew.
There you go.
You're not going to record on Thanksgiving.
No, we're not going to record on Thanksgiving. Nope. That will be the Spectre episode. Send your feedback to show@notinthecreepyway.com or call us on a new voicemail account to leave voice messages. Or you can text us at this account to leave text messages. The number is 425-243-9169. That's 425-243-9169. What are you waiting for? Put it in your phone right now, and then when you listen to an episode, you can just hit your contacts. Dial it already.